off and the clock has started.
Here we go.
Welcome to 20 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. I'm your announcer, Amy. Before we get started with this episode, Doug wanted me to let you know that this episode will be longer than 20 minutes. He said he tried to edit the show, but there was just too much good stuff. He also said if you only have 20 minutes to spare, cancel your next meeting or walk a little bit farther. He thanks you for your understanding. Here's Doug.
Yes, cancel that meeting so you can listen to me. My name is Doug Prazak, and if I may borrow a line from John Oliver, welcome, welcome, welcome. I don't think that's copyrighted, but if it is, my apologies to John. And thank you very much for spending your valuable time with me. And thanks to Amy for breaking the news to you. Yes, this episode will be longer than 20 minutes. Not too much longer, maybe 7-8 minutes. It's hard to tell since I'm recording this part of the show before I ever get to the end. But let's see. I'll do it this way, okay? This episode is exactly
25
minutes and
8
seconds long. I also want to say thanks once again to those of you who have supported this podcast by donating on the Buy Me a Coffee site. I really do appreciate it. It means a lot to me, and it helps defer the cost of posting the shows on the hosting site. So I really do truly thank you. You know, I'm not one of those highfalutin famous podcasters with 12 million subscribers getting billions of dollars in advertising. You see, if you were listening to that other person, you would just be like a tiny drop in their 12 million drop pond. But since you're here, well, you're like a gallon in a 60-gallon pool. Not only that, but you're a gallon with other gallons from a bunch of other countries. It's a veritable United Nations here. For example, last episode's tuner inners were from the Port of Spain in Trinidad, Tobago. Every episode, those guys are the first ones to log in and listen. So, thank you. Adelaide, South Australia, Amsterdam, North Holland, Frankfurt, on Main. I assume I'm pronouncing it right. You've been with me for a long time, and it's M-A-I-N. Frankfurt, on Main, in Hesse, in Germany, and Ciudad Nezahual. Oh, God. I rehearsed this, and I still screwed it up. Ciudad Nezahualcoyotl. I'm going to get this. Ciudad Nezahualcoyotl in Mexico. I really tried my best on that one. I do not know how I ended up equating you all to drops and gallons, but regardless, I appreciate you being here. Oh, and hello to some of our last episode tuner-inners. Edenton, North Carolina, Gresham, Oregon, and St. Charles, Missouri, and Elwood City and Pennsylvania. I know there's a bunch more of you out there, but like I already mentioned, the show's going to be a bit long, so I apologize. You're all still very important to me, honest. I'm not kidding. All right, let's just get right into today's topic since I've already wasted
3 minutes and 21 seconds
of your time. As you may recall, in the last episode, I was bitching about store displays happening too soon. Christmas in October is just wrong. Halloween in October is just right. And that means people are decorating and they're putting up signs in our yard that say boo or some fake cobwebs on our front porch. For the most part, they're just out there having some Halloween spirit and not really trying to scare anyone, because putting a sign on your lawn that says boo isn't going to cut it. You know, maybe if that sign dropped down from the ceiling when a kid rings the doorbell, that might enforce the boo part. However, there are some people who go all out and create a haunted house theme with, you know, fog machines and flashing lights and creepy sounds and music and people jumping out and scaring you. And then there's the theme parks and their fright nights. You know, down here in SoCal, as we call it, every theme park has a version of some sort of fright fest. Universal Studios, Knott's Berry Farm, Magic Mountain, Disneyland. Although Disneyland's, we'll just call it haunted adjacent. It's not really that scary as, let's say, Universal Studios. Even the LA Zoo has Boo at the Zoo. What the hell is that? You walk around and from behind a tree, a monkey jumps out at you? Well, all of that got me to wondering, you know, because I'm easily wondered, how did all of this amped up, scare the crap out of you stuff start? You know, I think you know what I had to do. That's right, because you're probably too busy buying Halloween candy that you may or may not hand out. I get a giant bag of the snack-sized Snickers and Milky Ways and then turn off the porch light. And that's how I like to spend Halloween. Anywho, I did some research so you didn't have to. How did we end up with haunted houses? Let's start off with the Egyptians. They placed their dead pharaohs in tombs in the pyramid. I mean, you know, why wouldn't they? And they knew that if you wanted to keep body snatchers away, the best way was to scare the hell out of them. The pyramid designers always included mazes and moving walls and self-opening doors and traps, and they used snakes and insects to keep the ne'er-do-wells away. Yeah, I know they weren't charging admission for people to get lost in a maze before getting to the snake room, but for anyone making their way into the pyramid without an annual pass, it certainly may have caused some shorts to get changed. So the Egyptians set up one of the earliest examples of people creating devices and sets to scare the unsuspecting. The Greeks and the Romans also did their part to get in on the game of history of haunted attractions. Theater was a vital part of their culture, so it makes sense that the ancients began devising, you know, rudimentary special effects to represent monsters and beasts. They also pioneered a number of theatrical devices to create spookiness. These included things that would eventually evolve into the elements used in haunted houses today, things like fog and trapdoors, ghostly images, and even fake blood and gore. Fast forwarding a bit, during the Renaissance, society's love of horror and the development of special effects continued to grow as theater became increasingly popular. Ghosts and demons and the devil and other monsters made regular appearances in plays. Even Bill Shakespeare worked them into his plays. By the 1800s, people became enthralled with ghosts and the possibility of other realms during this century. Mediums, fortune tellers, spiritualists, and conjuring sessions to communicate with the dead became a form of entertainment for the elite. Many clairvoyants became renowned celebrities who were paid top dollar for their services. Well, magician Harry Houdini set out to disprove the practice and debunked several famous spiritualists. Anyone else see the double standard here? You know, spiritualists bad, magic good? The haunting and spooky theme of the theater continued, and it included an invention by John Pepper that is still used today. It's a setup that uses mirrors and made people appear to be translucent apparitions on the stage. This technique is still known as Pepper's Ghost. Some of you have seen this effect and may not have known it. If you've been on the Rise of the Resistance ride in Disneyland or Disney World. Now, in the beginning of this attraction, guests are huddled into a room where instructions are given to you by a hologram of some Star Wars character up on a platform. I don't know who it is. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. I do know it's not that big, hairy, chewy Chonga dog guy, okay? The Pepper's Ghost effect happens when an image or movie is projected onto a mirror offstage that's angled so it reflects onto a super clean sheet of glass on stage. From the audience perspective, you can see the image and everything behind it, hence the see-through ghost. Bottom line is the Pepper's Ghost is a cool effect and it started scaring the crap out of the people back in the 1800s. The beginning of the 20th century saw the traveling carnivals and dark rides became popular amusement park attractions. The dark rides had patrons sitting on a boat or a train and automatically moved through numerous scenes. This, of course, evolved into the dark rides in amusement parks everywhere in the world. I don't need to list them. You know which ones I'm talking about. Haunted Mansion, Pirates of the Caribbean. Around this time, many of the residential houses built during the early 1800s, were becoming worn down and dilapidated. To prevent kids from exploring these dangerous buildings, adults would say that ghosts inhabited the rundown homes, and that just further fueled the technique of haunted dwellings. Sure, kids, that old building, it's got ghosts. You don't want to go in. You might as well have said there's a big bag of candy in there waiting for you. Oh, no, don't go in there. The first recorded haunted ghost house attraction was the Orton and Spooner Ghost House, which opened in 1915 in Liphook, England, as part of an Edwardian fair. In America, Halloween-themed haunted houses first emerged during the Great Depression as parents schemed up ways to distract young tricksters. Their Halloween pranks had sort of escalated to property damage, vandalism, and harassment of strangers. So basically, cities were looking for ways to buy off these kids. The first haunted houses were very primitive, Groups of families would decorate their basements and hold house-to-house parties. Kids could spook themselves by traveling from basement to basement and experience different kinds of scary scenes. Of course, 1969 gave us arguably the most famous haunted house, or should I say haunted mansion, of all time. It was the opening of Disneyland's Haunted Mansion. Now, if for some reason you don't know about it, the mansion features a spectral sea captain, a ghostly wedding party, transforming portraits, and a headless horseman. Walt Disney actually did not like the idea of putting an old, decrepit-looking structure in the middle of his park, so he took inspiration from San Jose's Winchester Mystery House and created a lavish mansion with pristine exterior. Originally, patrons were supposed to walk through the Haunted Mansion, but the park staff had problems maintaining their pace and keeping the line moving steadily. So it became a dark ride in which patrons sit in trains known as doom buggies that carry them from room to room throughout the mansion. The mansion's centerpiece is the Grand Hall, which is a 90-foot-long ballroom sequence of dancing ghosts at a birthday party. And by now, you should know how the effect is achieved. Disney brought the scene to life through the illusions known as Pepper's Ghost. Fun fact, the haunted house was actually part of Disney's original plan for the park long before Disneyland was built in 1955. In the original pre-construction artist renderings, a run-down mansion and graveyard can be seen overlooking Main Street. Good call, Walt. Within a few years, the haunted house experience had spread across the country. As Hollywood began to embrace slasher movies, the haunted house industry reaped the benefits. During the next couple of decades, the number of professional haunted houses erupted. It's estimated that roughly 2,700 of them operated nationwide last year. A large haunted house attraction can reportedly earn $3 million during a Halloween season, and the industry is worth $300 million, according to an NBC report. So there you go. From Egyptians making spooky pyramids to scare off people, to theme parks making spooky haunted houses to make you pay big bucks to walk through them. That's the backstory on haunted houses. But what about the real haunted houses? Well, when we come back, I have a list of places you can go to meet some ghosts. Don't go away.
Hallmark presents Halloween as you've never seen it before. Hallmark's Boo Bazaar, where actual costume accessories create a spectacle beyond belief. Horrify your head. Try on glowing terror. Shake in your shorts. Everything to let the ghoul times roll is at Hallmark's Boo Bazaar. Now playing in a store near you.
I'm frightened.
Actually, that lady says I'm frightened scares me more than anything. That was creepy. All right, we're back. You know, not all ghosts wait for Halloween night to communicate with the living. Hauntings have been reported throughout centuries all over the world. Some ghostly entities are content to just simply exist amongst the living. Others like to taunt, and they will push and grab and even bite visitors who dare to intrude on their domain. Well, where can you go to perhaps get taunted or pushed or grabbed or bit by a ghost? Well, get a pencil and paper. I'll wait. All right, you ready? You can write these down. First up is the Rose Hall in Jamaica. The Georgian plantation of Rose Hall sits near Montego Bay and was built in the 1770s. The property was originally owned by a man named John Palmer. The estate had a sprawling fields of sugarcane and hundreds of slaves to maintain them. Things only got worse for both the slaves and Palmer when he married an English-born woman named Annie. In order to gain control of the plantation and Palmer's wealth, Annie poisoned him to death. She also earned the name White Witch by the slaves for her practice of voodoo, her torture of slaves, and the murder of two more husbands. After the slaying of a slave's family, the slave in question murdered Annie. She is laid to rest on the property in a stone tomb, but it's said the grounds and its guests are still tormented by her vengeful spirit. Off to Denmark and Dragsholm Slot. Dragsholm Slot was built in the 13th century and has served many functions over the years. What began as a fort turned into a prison, only to be blown up and rebuilt into a more modern castle. Today, it's been updated and opened as a hotel with a Michelin star restaurant, even though it's known as one of the most haunted houses in Europe. There are reportedly hundreds of ghosts and poltergeists roaming the halls and the grounds of Dragsholm, giving it the name the House of 100 Ghosts. Who counted them? Come on. Our next stop is the Ponare Castle in Romania. Bran Castle may be marketed as the home of the famous Vlad the Impaler, you know, the historical figure is connected with Dracula. Well, Vlad actually has several residences. Ponare Castle sits at the top of 1,400 steps, giving it an eagle's nest view over the River Argus and the valley beyond. It's said that Vlad's first wife threw herself off the battlements rather than being captured by the invading Ottoman army. Over the years, people have claimed to witness floating lights drifting through the ruins, inexplicably low temperatures in certain areas of the castle, and the smell of rotting flowers in rooms with nothing but stone. Others say they've been assaulted, even bitten, while staying the night on the grounds. Now we're going to head off to England and the ancient Ram Inn. It was originally built as housing for masons, workers, and enslaved people as they constructed a nearby church. It later became the home of the first recorded vicar in 1154, before turning into an inn and pub. It was built on a pagan burial ground with intersecting lines that trace directly to Stonehenge. Old superstitions believed the land to be infused with dark energy. Visitors claim they've heard a baby crying in the men's kitchen, which is where the burial grounds allegedly existed. Others report being pushed up steep staircase by invisible hands. I could use some of those sometimes. People have reported seeing multiple apparitions, including a cavalier striding across a room, two monks standing in a corner, don't know what they're doing there, and a phantom shepherd and his dog guarding the door. Other encounters are far more violent, including one man being flung across the hall and multiple claims of a succubus who has sexual intercourse with sleeping victims in the middle of the night. Settle down. You don't have to go there if you don't want to. While you're in England, just hop over the Irish Sea to Ireland and visit Leap Castle in Ireland. Leap Castle dates back to around 1250 and boasts being Ireland's most continued inhabited castle. It also has a bloody history. Why wouldn't it? The name originally translates as Leap of the O'Bannons, named so because of two feuding brothers who jumped off a rocky outcrop to determine who would rule the clan. I guess one of them. A priest was murdered in the chapel, and hundreds of skeletons were found in a dungeon behind a hidden wall. Over the years, several ghosts have been seen. The Red Lady walks around carrying the dagger used to kill her baby and then herself. Two little girls named Charlotte and Emily run through the halls, with Charlotte calling out Emily's name. The murdered priest lurks in the hallway near the chapel, and there have been multiple reports of creature size of a sheep that smells like rotting corpse and has a human face with black holes for eyes. That's a nightmare right there. Next, we go down under to Monte Cristo Homestead in Australia. Known as the most haunted house in Australia, Monte Cristo Homestead has a long history of tragic events tied to the ghosts that continue to inhabit the property. Christopher Crowley built the farm on an isolated hill in 1884. During their time on the farm, the Crowleys witnessed one maid commit suicide. Additionally, another maid chained their illegitimate son to a bed, a young stable boy was lit on fire to be taught a lesson, and their grandchild was dropped off the steps and killed. God. People have reported seeing lights shining through the house when there is no electricity, observing a figure standing on the balcony, and hearing chains rattling and screams. Others claim they can feel hands resting on their shoulders, or an ice-cold hand in their own when no one else is around. People say they've become intensely nauseated overwhelmingly sad and have witnessed mist rolling through the house. All right, next, we're going to go to Canada and the Banff Springs Hotel in Alberta. The hotel opened in the late 1800s and was one of Canada's first railway hotels. The original building was destroyed in 1926 and replaced in 1928. The hotel is operational to this day, though it supposedly hosts some permanent guests like the Ghost Bride, who can be seen drifting through the ballroom with flames rising from her dress. Sam the Bellman, who still accompanies guests to their rooms as long as they don't talk to him or try and give him a tip. Many of the rooms are reported haunted, with guests claiming pillows being ripped from underneath their heads and hands shoving them out of bed. Are they sure it's a ghost? One room in particular holds a gruesome history where an entire family was murdered. Guests who stayed in that room have been woken by screaming, with bloody handprints on the mirror that can't be cleaned, but then disappear. It is now boarded over and inaccessible, but the family is still seen lurking outside in the hallway. France has the Chateau Les Fougères. How's that for my French? Fougères. I'm going to go with that. The Chateau Fougères is one of the most documented haunted houses in France. Built sometime between the 15th and 16th centuries, the chateau was purchased in 2009 in need of major repairs. While renovating, the owners discovered multiple anomalies, leading them to invite paranormal investigators to the property. As of today, dozens of ghosts, poltergeists, and other reportedly supernatural phenomena have been documented in various forms. The scrape of iron across the floor of the old weapons room, ghosts tied to portraits found in the archives, books thrown across rooms, handles turning on their own, and more have been video recorded, photographed, and witnessed over the years. The unexplained noises of children playing, voices whispering, and women crying are frequently experienced by visitors. A child was even reportedly slapped by a ghost nanny after misbehaving.
Oh my God.
And lastly, we head off to California and to the Winchester House in San Jose, California. Us locals call it the Winchester Mystery House. I have actually been there a couple of times. I am pleased to report I have not seen a ghost yet, but I have been through there, including a nighttime flashlight tour. Yeah, here's the backstory. Sarah Winchester was married to William Winchester, the guy who made the Winchester rifle, which is also known as the gun that won the West. After her husband and child died, Sarah Winchester moved to California and began building the Winchester House. She believed she had to maintain construction in order to appease the spirits of those who had died from the Winchester rifle. When she passed away, the house had been worked on nonstop for over 38 years, with strange features like staircases rising into ceilings, doors leading to nowhere, and non-working bathrooms meant to serve as decoys. Visitors and museum workers have claimed witnessing multiple supernatural events. Like I said, I haven't, but that doesn't mean anything. The ghosts include Clyde, the wheelbarrow ghost. How nice they named him. He has been seen working on the fireplace in the grand ballroom or pushing a wheelbarrow around the grounds. Guests claim feeling tugs on their clothing, hearing footsteps, or seeing figures appear in the windows and hallways. Not just one of the most haunted houses in the world, it's one of the most well-known haunted houses. So there you go, haunted houses. I think it's a good time to wrap up this haunted episode, but first, what did we learn? Well, we learned that the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans all started this spooky haunted nonsense. And then William Shakespeare, I know him as Bill, he jumped on board with his ghosts and plays. We learn that you see Pepper's ghosts everywhere, you just don't know it. And we learn if you want to get bitten by a ghost, go to the Polnari Castle in Romania. If you want to get help to your room by Sam the Bellman, then head off to Banff Springs Hotel in Canada. And if you would like to get a very special visit by a succubus during the night, then the ancient ram in England is where you want to be. That will wrap up episode 128. Thank you very much for tuning and listening. And I will talk to you next time on 20 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. Bye-bye. Now get on out there and get scared. Just avoid those pyramids. Apparently, there's no way out. Hi, it's me again, Doug. I want to take up a couple more seconds of your time just to remind you, if you want to stay informed of when the next podcast is posted, all you need to do is sign up at on that Instagram machine. It's at 20MYNGB, 20MYNGB, and that means 20 minutes you'll never get back. If you sign up there, you'll always see when the next podcast is uploaded. And if you want to leave some comments, by all means, please do go to the website at 20minutespodcast.com. So it's 20minutespodcast.com. And you can leave your comments there. It also tells you how you can be an announcer for the show. So take a look at those two things if you'd like and stay informed. And all, as always, thank you very much for listening to 20 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. Bye-bye.